What the heck does love mean? And how do you do it? Should we be following the biblical version of it, or should we be going based off of our interpretation of it? That's what we're going to cover in today's video with my special guest, Chelsea Renee. I'm super glad to have her on this podcast episode. So let's just get right into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the 12F podcast. My name is Greg, your host. And if you're new to this podcast, we're all about discussing complex cultural, political, and even theological based subjects, making them more digestible to the common person. And I do hope that resonates with you. Chelsea, glad to have you here. Thanks for joining me on the podcast. I have quite a few questions for you, considering that you're a big love person. I've known you for what, like 5 years now? It been 5 years? Yeah. Okay. Think, so,
yeah, about that. Probably like four.
4 years? Okay. Yeah. I have quite a few questions for you about love. The first question being, getting right into it, should human beings have the autonomy to define love in the way that they choose?
That's a really good question. I think that with anything, that there should be a kind of neutral understanding of what something is. Because without a neutral understanding, that's when you get into a territory of of kind of like just complete chaos. And I think that love, I don't think that love is any different. It's like, although people, there's nuances within it, of course, the way that people practice it or the way that people go about maneuvering through it is going to differ depending on who you are, your background, what speaks to your heart. But I think that standard, there should be a standard of what love is, or at least what it looks like. And I think that that should be the thing that's kind of practiced or followed, I guess, to a certain degree.
But do you feel that?
To answer your question, huh?
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead. I was going to say, to answer your question, I don't think that humans should be able to define, if we're saying the word define, I don't think that they should be able to define it however they choose. I think you should be able to practice it or maneuver through it in whichever way speaks to you. But as far as the definition, I think that love, as all things, should have a standard definition. And so that there's no confusion about what is love or what isn't it, you know, we all know.
Yeah. I think we see a big, it's funny you use the word confusion, because I think there's a lot of confusion nowadays in today's society and in, you know, in today's world, that, you know, people are defining love in a multitude of ways. And it's kind of confusing, because how do you know that your way of loving is correct? I think biblically, if, you know, I'm a Christian, so things as far as the way, well, the way love is described in the Bible is just very different from the way the world views it now. I do want to get into specifically the biblical aspect of it, because I want to get your take on this particular quote in the Bible. It says, love is patient, and you're probably familiar with this. It says, love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, and always perseveres. I guess my question is, do you agree with this version of love?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that that is a very good, stable definition of what love is, or what it should at least encompass. And I think that if you are looking at your life and you're trying to figure out if a relationship has love in it, or a situation has love in it, or if you are feeling love towards something, it's like you can ask yourself, are these kind of like do a checklist. And yeah. I think that it pretty much encompasses, I feel like it pretty much encompasses all things. I'm trying to think if there's anything I would add. There's definitely nothing I would take away. I don't think there's anything that should be taken out. If folks want to add stuff in there, but that's within the same realm of that, then I would say, okay.
I feel as if though when you say we should feel free to add stuff, I feel like that's where things can get tricky and muddy and kind of gray though, because I think nowadays you do see people adding things in there like, oh, but this is also love. And I think that God has, I like to use, and I remember this quote from another creative. She said something along the lines of, God dropped Adam and Eve in a garden, right? Not a jungle. So a garden, if you think about it, it has parameters, it has guidelines, it has structure to it. That's why it has a particular look. That's what makes it a garden, right? It has function to it. But a jungle does not have that. A jungle is wild and open, and it's free to an interpretation, if you will. You know, like, I think once we start adding things that God did not add, I feel as if that's where things can get very tricky. And I think now in the Western world, I think now you're seeing that where things have become very degenerate, as I would call them. I don't know if other people would call them that are not a Christian, but I would call them very degenerate. You know, things that God did not define as love, people consider love. I mean, you even hear, and I know you have a very specific view on this, which is why I wanted to talk to you about it. People have a very specific view of love is love, and you should be able to love who you love, regardless of, you know, sexual orientation or, you know, how you might identify. What do you think about that?
Yeah, personally, I do agree that you should be able to love whoever you want to love. I think that to me, when I think of love in its truest, purest form, there is no negative frequency. Like, there is no, if I'm choosing to care for another human being, there's only positive that can come from that. If I'm truly, truly loving in the way that, in its purest form, the truest sense of the word, like, to me, that only, that love begets love. Like, it just ripples of its own frequency. So I do think that if people are out here wanting to give their whole heart and to another human being that happens to be the same sex as them, or the, to me, I just don't see that as being a negative thing if it's really love that they're trying to give. Anything else I can't necessarily speak for, but
Okay,
I think that
so
everyone should have that right, just the same as I have it, you know, as a straight person.
right. And yeah, I knew that would be your stance. Obviously, you know, we're friends, so I do know your belief as far as that is concerned. But I guess my question is then, if you believe that the Bible is correct about the interpretation of how to love someone correctly, you believe that the Bible is accurate, and I mean, love is a very hard, it's a very intricate thing. It's a very complex thing. It's very, you know, it's very elemental, if you will, right? Like, it's not an easy thing to do because obviously you see people are not very good at it. Like, people are getting divorced. People are, you know, you have infidelity. People who claim to love each other are committing infidelity. I would say that human beings are not the best lovers. We try. But that doesn't mean we're any good. The only reason why anybody could be any good is, I believe, obviously, that love comes from God. So my question is specifically, if you believe that the Bible is accurately portraying how to love someone, if you believe that the Bible is true in that way, why do you push back on the idea of that there's only a, like, there's a specific way to love as far as male and female. In other words, like, the Bible is very clear that, you know, homosexuality is wrong. And I do want everyone to be able to do as they please, but at the same time, I have to be realistic. If God says that something is not okay, I have to subscribe to his teaching. And I do. To be clear, as a Christian, I do subscribe to the ways of God. If there's anything that God says is wrong, I also believe it is wrong. So to restate my question, if you believe that the Bible is true about love and how to love specifically, why would you push back on the idea that that maybe God could be wrong about, you know, male and female being the only specific union that is able and should be able to do that?
Honestly, because to me, it's to me, sometimes things feel that they contradict themselves in the Bibles. At least when it comes to this, I just can't, to me, I can't imagine that there's a God that is fully accepting and fully of all humans, all creatures under the sun. And there is a man and a man who want to care for each other, and they want to love each other, and in the biblical sense of the word, love each other, and that there's a God that's somewhere that's hating that, that's upset about that. Like, to me, I don't know. I just think, and of course, I'm not, like, as you already know, I'm not a religious person, so there are aspects of the Bible that resonate with me, be on a heart level, on a soul level, and I'm like, that feels good. And there are other parts of it that don't feel as good. If it doesn't feel, that doesn't feel like love to me. To me, that doesn't feel like love. To say that doesn't feel like all those other things that we just said love was. And it just doesn't add up to me. It just feels contradictory. And I guess that's where my pushback is. Yeah, I guess that's just where my pushback is. It just
So
doesn't feel.
my thing would be, if we said that we shouldn't be able to define love, why do we? 'Cause you said before that, you know, you don't feel as if that is love, but we just agreed that we don't get to define love. We have no say in what love is per se. Because if God, if
Well,
love, go ahead.
I don't agree with that though. I mean, I don't think that we don't get a say. I guess I'm just saying I think that there should be a neutral say. Like, there should be a neutral definition. I'm not saying who gets to make it up, but I'm saying I think that there should be a human understanding, a neutral, not, I don't know if neutral is the right word, but like a baseline understanding of what something is. Like, everything needs to be defined. It needs to be defined.
Do
Like, we at least gotta have some understanding of what it is.
the people collectively define what love is? So you're saying it shouldn't be one person that defines it. You're saying that people collectively should define love?
Is that what I'm saying? Is that what I'm saying? I guess so. I guess that is what I'm saying.
Okay, so
I
my question then would be, if when that generation dies out, does a new generation come in and redefine love?
That's a good question. That
Because
is a really good question.
in my view, in the Christian view, in the biblical worldview, there is no existence of love without God. God is the embodiment of what love is. So we don't get to define something that God created and that God actually and essentially is. If we're cosmic accidents, all of this is just relative. Love is relative. It's all love itself would be relative because we're just making it up as we go. We're all deciding together collectively that is what it is, that we're all collectively creating this thing. And how do we do that? How do we form, you know, definitions of things if we're all just accidents, if we're all just brain matter that spawned, you know, like if we're collectively something that evolved out of whatever, who's to say that anything is wrong or right? Who's to say love is love at all? Who's to say it's just not like a chemical reaction in your brain?
So that just makes me think, like, let's say we all did define. Let's say we all did, and this is just me speaking, like, we're just having a conversation.
Sure,
I'm like,
yeah.
what if we all What if we all did define love for ourselves? What if we did? And that's just me throwing that out there.
I think
What?
that. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh no. Yeah, you could definitely say your piece. I'm just saying, like, I'm thinking to myself, what if we did all define love for ourselves? What if we did define it as whatever feels good to you, whatever feels good to us is love for us? I think that even in that, not to take away from anything that you said, you're just making me think of more things, but I'm thinking like
Well,
even within that, there has to be,
let me chime in really quick before you go further. I think that could be very dangerous, and the only reason being is that, and I hate to make this correlation, but it's so true. In the Church of Satan, one of the principles of their religion is, or they call it lack of religion, is do as you please. That is Satan's like thing, is do what you want. Do what you want when you want, l live as you want, and there are no consequences to anything because you are God. You get to decide what this is and how you do it, and who you get to love and how you get to love that person. But God says, no, this is how I ordered it. This is how I designed it. This is the way it should be because this is what works. Anything outside of that will fail because it's only going to hurt you in the end. Right? Now, if we get to define love, if we get to decide how this looks, right? How this plays out, there's a good chance that, and 100% probability that we fail. Because we're relying on our own understanding of how things operate. And our human brain can only do so much. Our human brain can only fathom so much, right? We're trying our best with the best that we have, with the best that we know. We don't know the outcome in the end of things, but God does, right? At the end of the day, because God has created an order and design to things, it's supposed to create order. And without that order, you have the jungle that I mentioned before. You have the jungle instead of the garden. And the garden is what brings forth fruit. The garden is what brings forth life, but the jungle brings forth chaos because it's a jungle, it's a free-for-all. And again, that is the thing in the Western world that is plaguing us now. That is the thing that's destroying us now. Men have forgotten how to be men, and therefore they don't know how to love their wives. They don't know how to love their girlfriends. They don't know how to love their wives. They don't even know how to love their children. And therefore, women also, likewise, they've forgotten how to be women. They've forgotten how to love their husband, how to love their boyfriends, how to love their children. And it's all because we have decided collectively that we're going to abandon God and abandon his ways of doing things, and we're going to go our own way, just like Satan wanted from the beginning. Because you have to remember, in the beginning, when Adam and Eve were in the garden, Satan said, did God really say that you would die if you partake of this fruit? Did God really say that? No, God just knows that you're going to be like him. So just take it. Just do it. Do as you please, right? Do as you, and they did. They did as they please, and look at where that got them. And look at also where that's gotten us as a society when we have abandoned the biblical way of love. You said it yourself that you believe that the Bible is accurate in how to love people. Don't keep any record of wrongs. Don't be impatient. Don't be unkind. Be kind. Be patient. Don't keep records of wrongs. Keep rejoicing with the truth. And that you said you agree with that. Now, outside of that, what is, if we're deciding that, okay, love is also, if we're deciding that, okay, you know what? Love is kind and it's patient, but it does keep records of wrongs. It does. Like, you see how it kind of like, you see where that break is? You see where things start to kind of break down, where it's kind of like, wait, if it's keeping record of wrongs, is it really patient? Like, is it really kind? Because if it is, if I am keeping records of wrongs, I'm not going to be kind to you anymore because I'm thinking about all the things that you did to me before. Do you see what I'm saying? Sorry to interrupt, guys. I just have a couple of quick notes. Follow and engage with 12F wherever you get your podcast. And if you don't mind, please take an extra minute to give the podcast a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. And if you want, you can follow me on X and engage with me directly on there. Like the video if you haven't already and hit the bell icon so you get notifications every time I upload. All right, back to the conversation. So what is your perspective on that, given everything I just said? Do you strongly feel as if we should be able to really be the ones to define what love looks like? That also means the breakdown of everything that you just agreed with.
Oh yeah. I mean, I wasn't saying that we should define it. I was just saying in a hypothetical world, what if we all did define that for ourselves? What kind of world would that be? But
The
I don't
now,
disagree.
the
I
jungle.
won't. Yeah, I mean, hey, I guess you're right. I don't disagree with what you're saying though. I do think that there should be a definition or there should be something to base love off of. Otherwise, people could just slap any do anything and just slap love on it and just say that that's what it is. And also, I think that it wouldn't give people the space to just be able to know when, because something can feel good to you or you can think that it's good, and so therefore there's an element of it that feels good to you, but you know that it's not right or it doesn't. Or it's not healthy for you, or it's not. But in your mind, like you said, we're not, we are flawed. So
I
anything
think
really goes. So it is a scary place to be, for sure.
I think that the evolution of the Western world, I touched on it a little bit before, but I'll use the feminist movement for example. I'm a feminist. I support women. What I don't support is women becoming misandrous, like, which means hating men, having a hatred of men. We don't need men in society. We don't need them in, we don't need them in the household. 'Cause you see that nowadays. I don't need a man to provide for me. I don't need a man to do anything for me. I can do it all by myself. That I don't believe is a good response to how to love people. It doesn't sound very loving to me. They're not embracing men. They're repelling men. They're pushing men away. And likewise, on the men's side, you have men saying, you know, we're just gonna run through these women. We're just gonna treat women any type of way. Now, obviously, this is not all men, but this is, you know, a good percentage of men that have decided collectively that, yeah, we're just gonna do whatever we want. Like, we don't care. We're not gonna be good fathers. We're not gonna, you know, take responsibility and be good husbands. You know, they're just doing what exactly whatever is their inclination is to do, their selfish inclination. And these are direct responses of kind of what you alluded to of do what thy will, you know, kind of we get to decide in some capacity. Maybe we should be able to be the ones to collectively decide together that this is okay. Like this is allowed. this is love because it feels right. But are our feelings a good measure of what we should be doing? Because I can tell you right now, at 10, I wanted to be, you know, many things. And at 15, I wanted to be an FBI agent. So it's very feelings, I think, are a bad way of trying to gauge whether or not something is right. But what do you think about that?
Oh yeah, I don't disagree. I think that feelings are also fleeting. A lot of times they're not based in, or they're at times they're not based in logic or anything that's rooted in reality. Sometimes you can just feel. I mean, you can just feel anything. If you feel it, you feel it. It doesn't have to be based in truth. It doesn't have to be based, rooted in any sort of reality. It's just what you feel. And I think that that's also, and that can get kind of dangerous because, again, there's no rhyme or reason to feelings at times. Think it can really uproot you. And so, sorry, the question was what was the question?
Well,
Sorry.
do you feel as if, do you think that feelings are an accurate, I guess, ruler to
Oh.
measure whether or not this is the way we should love? Because it feels
Oh,
right.
yes. And yes, I don't, well, no, is what I'm saying. I don't agree. I think this also really goes hand in hand with that internal work. And I guess that looks differently to everybody. Like some people's internal work is, getting closer to God or understanding what God's purpose for their life is, or other people's internal work, it may be, I don't know, meditating or whatever helps them to connect further with themselves. But whatever it is that helps you connect with yourself, I think that that work is so important because then you understand what you really feel. I think there's also a disconnect between our feelings a lot of times because I don't think people really know themselves. And when you don't know yourself, I think your feelings can be easily manipulated. They can be easily influenced, if that makes sense.
Well, I have a question for you because you said something very specific. You said that we should connect with ourselves to find out what we're feeling is accurate, correct? Like something along the lines of that. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but I think that's generally what you said. And I find that tricky because how do you, like, let's say you feel like you connected with yourself. How do you know that's what you really feel then? How do you know if you accurately connected with yourself? Like, how do you know? Like, are you guessing? Like, what's the measure of whether or not someone is truly connected with their self? And what does that even mean? Because I think that in my understanding biblically, the only way we can really accurately connect and understand who we are truly is if we connect with God. Because if we are children of God and we identify as that, we already know who we are. Like we already know. Like I know who I am. I know who I am in Christ, and I know that, you know, I'm a child of God. And I think that, you know, you have celebrities like Robin Williams, who tragically committed suicide. I mean, you have countless other celebrities who, you know, who do ayahuasca and, you know, all sorts of drugs to connect with themselves. And sometimes people say they see God, quote unquote. They feel like they've connected with their higher self, that higher consciousness. Some people even call it Christ consciousness, because apparently Christ is the, you know, the superior, I guess, model of what connecting with yourself is. I believe that's all divination and you know, New Age, but that is the measure that people are using. I don't know if connecting with yourself will accurately even help you in regards to your feelings, because again, you just don't know if you've truly connected with yourself, or maybe, who knows, maybe you're halfway there and you haven't really fully reached it yet. But at least with God, we actually know. Like, we know when we know. You know?
But do you?
Yeah. It's
I
there's a peace. Before you continue, I just want to say that last, because I want to answer your question. If do we?
don't.
Yes, the answer is yes, because there is a certain peace that I have in Christ that I've never experienced anywhere else. And I've lived in both. I've lived in the world and I've lived with God. And with God, that is the purest form of peace that I have ever experienced in my entire life. There is nothing that comes close to it. There's nothing that can replicate it, and there is nothing that can surpass it. It's a perfect peace.
But then what do you say to people who have been in Christ, who didn't feel that peace, and they felt the opposite, or in their life in Christ was just full of turmoil, and then when they, because I know people who've had that experience. Not to say your experience is not valid, but what would you say to those people who because I have a friend, and I have a couple of friends who have kind of been transitioned, and that was their experience. That they felt like their life with Christ was full of was confusion and shame, and they didn't feel that peace. They felt the opposite of the peace. But then coming out of it is when they started to feel the peace. So
Completely.
what would you say to those people?
I would say that when people come to Christianity, there's this idea that everything is going to be perfect and that God is never going to allow things in your life that's going to test you, or, well, God doesn't test anyone, but He allows the temptation. He allows the hard times. There's the story of Job where, and I won't get into the entire story, but there's a story. The story of Job is that Job had everything under the sun. Job had, a wife, house, land, animals. He had wealth. Job was a wealthy man. But Satan came to God at the throne of God, and he was like, God's like, have you seen my servant Job? Like, he serves me. And the devil's like, the only reason why he serves you is because you've given him all these things. Take these things away, and he's not going to serve you anymore. And God's like, you know what? Try it. Do it. Take everything from him, but you can't take his life. And so Satan does. He takes everything from Job, everything. He kills his children. His all his livestock die. I think his house is gone. All his land is just done. Everything. He even breaks out in hives, like warts or some type of leprosy type figure he now holds for himself. And his life is in such utter turmoil that, he's like, God, what did I do to deserve this? Why are you doing this to me? And God doesn't say anything. God says nothing. Now, in the end, Job is restored everything that he had before, right? And the reason why is because God says, in the end, Job has honored me. And you might ask, well, how has Job honored God? God says, Job never stopped praying. Job always talked to me. He never stopped talking to me. He kept praying to me. Even despite him losing everything, he still cried out to me. He still looked to me. He still asked me. He still came to me. And I think that when people deconstruct, for which is the term, deconstruct from Christianity, they are like, well, I'm going to turn away from God because my mom had cancer and God didn't heal her. Or my cousin got hit by a car and she was only 4. Why would a loving God do such a thing? How, if God is supposed to be love, like you say, Greg, like, where's the love in that? Right? God does not promise everything is going to be okay all the time. He actually never guarantees that. What he guarantees is that he will be with you through it. Because he didn't, you have to look at that. You have to understand that God didn't even spare the father didn't even spare his own son. He allowed his son to experience being murdered at the hands of his own creation. God didn't, the father didn't keep his son from that. He allowed his son to be murdered at the hands of men, but he helped his son through it. It's not, I'm gonna, like, you might say, God, take this pain away from me. And God says, no. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to take the pain away from you, but I will help you through the pain. That is love. That is love because now you're stronger. Now you're better. And this is the understanding that I was trying to allude to before is you cannot lean on your own understanding. You have to lean on the understanding of God because if you lean on your own understanding, you might think that God is trying to hurt you. You might think God is trying to hurt me in allowing my mother to die of cancer. God is trying to hurt me. Why would a loving God do this to me? I don't want to serve this type of God. I want nothing to do with this type of God. If you're leaning on your own understanding, that is exactly your mindset. But if you're leaning on the understanding of God, despite your mother dying of cancer, you're saying, you know what? I have no idea why you're doing this. Why you're allowing this, but I don't need to know why you're doing it. I'm just gonna trust that you got it. I'm gonna trust that whatever you're doing, it's for a reason. I don't know what the reason is, and I don't need to know the reason, but I know that you're doing it for a reason. Because at the end of the day, God is just. God is going to repay everyone for what they've done. God is just. He's good. He's loving. He's and because he's just, that means he's the embodiment of love, right? Because if you're loving, shouldn't someone get justice for what they've done wrong to someone else? Isn't that love? Isn't love supposed to be just? Shouldn't people be punished for their wrongdoings? But shouldn't people also be rewarded for the good things they've done? Isn't that love also? It's not, and I'll touch on this before I swing things back to you in closing, but there's this idea that, okay, I want to love who I want to love. If I'm gay, I should be able to love whoever I want. Why would a God care about something like that? People start thinking that they're the abomination because the Bible says biblically that homosexuality is an abomination. A man lying with another man is abomination, is an abomination. People start thinking, well, God thinks I'm an abomination. No, God doesn't think that you're an abomination. God doesn't think you're disgusting. God thinks what you're doing is disgusting. You're not disgusting. That's what the enemy wants you to believe. He wants you to believe you're nasty, and God also thinks you're nasty. God doesn't think that. If you read it carefully, God is saying, no, I love you. I just don't like what you're doing. Because what you're doing is not love. You think because that's the way you feel that that's love, but it's not. It's destruction. It's going to hurt you in the long run, which is why it's destruction. It's not destruction because I don't want you to love someone that you care about. It's destruction because in the end, if you do that, if you partake in that homosexual behavior, you will hurt yourself. Maybe not in
But
this
then it's
life,
like,
but spiritually you will. Go ahead, go ahead.
no, it's just, well, I guess that is another and deep conversation to get into that would take a
Sure.
lot of time to get into it.
Yeah.
So it's hard to open up the rabbit hole of that, but it's like, yeah, I guess I do. Yeah, it is. It's just so, there's just so much of this that is There's so many
Yeah.
sectors of it to continuously like break off into.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes this conversation so like you need to have like 3 hours to have this conversation.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have that time, that type of time, I know. Well, in closing, I do want to, cover this last base here. And it's out of it's actually from C.S. Lewis, which is a Christian author. He actually created the Chronicles of Narnia and the whole story, the whole yeah. And he was a well-known Christian, and he came up with these bullet points of different types of love. And there's four types of love, apparently. And one is called, and it's apparently it's rooted in Greek as well. It's called storge, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. And
Oh,
that,
yeah, I
yeah,
know the
so you're familiar. And that's affection. So affection covers, an array of loves, like animals, the care a mother has for a babe. It's a picture of affection, so to speak. It relies on, the expected and the familiar. And for example, when a man and a woman fall in love, it's often because of certain affections, a particular location, experience, personality, interests that begin to wrap around the couple. So to make love an expected and familiar part of their shared lives, it's a familiarity aspect of, what it means to have affection for someone. And then the other one is friendship, so which is the Greek word philia. Friendship is the love dismissed most often. It's like, to the ancients, friendship seemed the happiest and most fully human of all loves, because we love to have friendships, and meaningful ones at that, right? And C.S. Lewis says that the crown of life and the school of virtue is friendship, and in the modern world, in comparison, ignores that. Why? Perhaps we know it's the most time consuming. Friendships are the most time consuming forms of love, and they're the least celebrated, and the ones that we could probably live without, right? But there's the other one, which is Eros, or Eros. I think that's how you pronounce it. Which is the romantic aspect of love. So different than friendship, lovers are, always talking to one another about their love, and are normally face to face, absorbed with each other. The danger in romantic love, though, is you follow blindly after a feeling of passion, right? So you feel like, oftentimes we feel like, after we've met someone that we really seem to kind of bond with, we're like, wow, I really want to be around you all the time. It's a blinding form of relationship, you know what I mean? But we celebrate the passion and think its absence means such love has died. But certainly, true romance is not, so volatile. So, and then the last one is agape love, right? This is charity form of love. This is our like chief aim of what love should be. The unconditional love of the Father given to us through his Son. Affection, friendship, and romantic love are each the training ground for charity to grow. Lewis reminds us that, there is no safe investment with this kind of love, right? To love at all is to be vulnerable, right? And for you, I know you know exactly what I mean, because I know that when you love deeply. And I know that to be true about you as a friend. You love very, very deeply. But, love, like anything, your heart is attached to it. And certainly it can be wrung out and possibly broken, right? If you want to make sure of, keeping your heart intact, you must give your heart to no one. Because giving your heart to someone risks, like I said, breaking it. Because what if they break your heart? To experience this type of agape love, it takes vulnerability, it takes risk, and that is something that no one really 100% wants to fall into, because it is scary to do, right? And to wrap it up carefully, this type of love, it's almost like motionless and airless, and it will change, but it will not be broken if it can be made unbreakable. This type of love is, like I said, the chief type of love that we're aspiring to have in marriage, in having children, or whatever, you know, whatever you long for in life. Even as a career, you want to love what you do. You want to love the people that are around you. And without that type of love, life kind of is meaningless. Would you agree?
Without agape love or
Yeah, without agape love, like, would you agree that, you know, life is kind of motionless or meaningless?
so without the highest form of love, life is meaningless, or without love in general. I mean, yeah, I would definitely say that. I feel like love is literally the motivating force behind my own life, personally. I feel like it's what moves me to do most things, actually, pretty much everything. I would say 90% of the things is motivated by love. And then there's like the 10% that's motivated by fear, which I think is also a very strong motivating force, fear happens to be. But I would say, yeah, I think so. Because it's like, then if it's not that, then what are we, then why are we here? To me, I just feel like love kind of answers the question of like our entire existence. Because otherwise, it seems to me that nothing really does have meaning. Like, if we're not here to love each other or care for each other, or to spread that energy, it just, yeah, I agree.
I think that's a
It
great
just seems.
point to end on. Yeah, the teachings of Jesus is that basically embodies everything you just said. Love one another, you know, care for one another, and without that, you know, we don't have the love of God within us if we are not loving one another. So I think that that is what we should all strive to do. I think that's a great point to end on. Chelsea, thank you for joining me in, you know, this episode 5 of this podcast. It's been a joy to listen to what you have to say, and I would love to have you back on, hopefully. I know this was really tough because you're so tired already from, you know, working. So I thank you for joining me on it.
That's okay. Thank you for having me. It was so fun. I mean, we talk like this all the time about different topics, so it just feels very much like normal, you know? But it's gonna be cool for other people to see, and also to like further the conversation too, because I think that's really what it's all about, like getting people to start talking about these things and hearing other people's points of view. So I'm looking forward to, I guess, you know, just hearing how it's received and what other people's input too.
Completely. Yeah.
So yeah.
Thanks again for joining me. Perfect. All right. Well, that's all I have for you guys today. I really enjoyed this conversation with Chelsea because, as always, she helps me think. And I think in podcast styles like this, where I'm talking with people, it's easier for me to gather my thoughts and kind of chime in off of what someone else is saying. I want to start doing more podcasts like this because it really does help me get my brain moving, you know? And it helps in turn create better content for you guys as well. So definitely get in the comment section and let me know what you guys think about everything Chelsea and I talked about today. And also what your view of love is. And do you think that the biblical definition of that is something that we should be following? Obviously, you know, I think so, but I would be interested to see what all of you have to say down in the comment section. But that's been it. See you guys in the next one. Bye.